Welcome in to a special extra of Courtside with Campbell and Knezovic. I'm Elijah Campbell, as always, and we have a little bit of a one-on-one here as I'm going to talk with Belmont head coach Casey Alexander. The Bruins are 8-3 after the first 11 and are coming off a win at St. Louis. So, Coach, without further ado, I'll go ahead and bring you in. How you doing? Thank you for joining us.
I'm great. Thanks for doing it. Excited about it.
Yeah, as always, always a blast talking to you. We talked to you before the season started. I think it was our second episode of this podcast. So we'll go ahead and have you back on and give a little bit of an update for those who haven't been following along in November, December. And we said it before the season started that you guys had one of the most important non-conference schedules or non-conference slates in the country, given the conference you're in the Ohio Valley, and given that your team has been punished basically for playing the OVC. The OVC was a little down last year, but a big non-conference slate. You guys have scheduled really, really tough. You've scheduled quality games. What do you like about your team so far after these first 11? What stood out to you, and what's something that you probably didn't anticipate from this team coming into the season?
Yeah, well, we've definitely learned a lot. Let's just start there. I mean, you can't play the schedule that we have and not be better for it, for one, but also just learn a lot about your team. It's been much more difficult, not as far as caliber of opponent, but just much more difficult to have to turn around every two or three days and play another really good team. And that's a tough physical grind, of course, but the mental aspect of it has been really, really a challenge. You know, we played 7 games in 15 days. Mm. Here we just finished that stretch, and, you know, those games included LSU and Dayton and 2 great mid-major teams in Iona and Drake, and it included St. Louis, who's a top 75 team. It included Lipscomb, who's our biggest rival. It included a game at Samford, who's the only team that beat us, you know, until really late in the season last year. So it's just been a tough, tough challenge. But I love how our guys have responded. That's probably what I've learned. Just kind of put a stamp on the fact that, you know, we do our experience, our maturity is really showing itself and has paid real dividends to this point.
And we'll go ahead and start with the game this week on Tuesday night on the road against a solid St. Louis team that plays in a tough A-10 conference. Big win, a true road win, which counts even a little more when you're looking at it in terms of quad one and quad two wins. It's big for the resume, sure, but how big is it to win a game where your offense may be struggling a little bit? You guys won it shooting, I think, about 49% effective field goal shooting, which isn't a formula that you guys kind of go by in winning a lot of the games that you have this year. But what does it say about your team defensively being able to win a game that's that kind of style?
Yeah, it does say a lot, and you're exactly right. It was a very atypical win for us, especially against a good team. We just don't get them very often if we're not good offensively. And we start that game 0-for-8 from the field, and we really were pretty miserable offensively until about the last 7 or 8 minutes, and we put it together nicely down the stretch. I mean, we scored just about every possession, or else those numbers you mentioned would look even worse. It was not a well played game. It was not a good game to watch, especially in the first half. But again, I do think that speaks volumes about our team. The fact that we can win a game like that on the road against a good A-10 opponent, is really satisfying for our group. It felt great riding back on that bus, that's for sure. You know, it's mm-hmm. interesting that, you know, St. Louis is literally the only school that called us about playing.
Wow.
The only one that asked us if we wanted to play. And they did so because they needed the same kind of game. They needed at worst case scenario, if they lose, they need to lose to a quad one team, you know, basically. But if they win, they get the benefit of that. And so it was an important game for both of us from that perspective.
Wow. So would St. Louis, I guess, be the highest caliber team that is on, I guess, on the schedule that requested to play you?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're the best and the worst because they're the only one. So
wow.
and that's even, it's a little unfair. I had called them as soon as our season was over last year. I reached out to several teams in that range. You know, Dayton was one of them, Richmond, Davidson, St. Louis, you know, teams that are kind of in this region, A-10 caliber teams, top 50, 75 caliber teams, just saying, hey, would anybody want to play a home and home? Mm-hmm. And I tried a couple of times, followed back up, and it was crickets. But several months later is when St. Louis called back and said they needed a game and would be interested. So So it was good. It was good to get.
What's the process like in terms of creating your schedule? You know every year you have to be able to make it the non-conference as tough as possible to kind of make it, you know, early season loss proof, for lack of a better way of saying it, or being able to give yourself chances to win quality games. I mean, you just mentioned, like, that's the only team that contacted you. So, like, what's your off season like whenever the season ends and you're like, all right, well, it's time to build a schedule?
Yeah, well, you're not starting with a blank slate. You know, that's, it seems that way, but it's not entirely true, because, you know, you're typically in the middle of, you know, a contract, you know, where you're agreeing to play somebody at least 2 years in a row, sometimes 4 years in a row. You know, so every year you're going to go in. If you got, let's say we have 12 games to schedule, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 of those are going to be repeat games. You know, in other words, we played at, you know, Samford last year, so they're going to play at our place this year. We played at Lipscomb last year, so they're going to play at our place this year. So you've got some that are built in. It's those other ones that are new where you really have, you know, the challenge. And for us, that's always going to be a couple of bye games, a couple of money games, like we play LSU this year. St. Louis is actually a bye game. They paid us to go. And so, you know, last year that was whoever. We were supposed to play USC. You know, the Power Fives, basically. You're always going to have a couple of those. You know, so that only leaves you with a couple of other games, really maybe 3 or 4 or 5 games where, you know, you're trying to find opponents that are similar to you. You know, but you can't just go schedule the Lakers every weekend. I mean, you got to schedule games that you can win. You know, it doesn't do you any good to play a good schedule if you don't win any of your games. You know, so the theory basically is play the best teams you can play, but also having a reasonably good chance to win.
Right, and I think your team definitely has this year. I mean, there's a lot of teams that I guess casual college basketball fans would look at, you know, be floored by, but like Ohio's a really, really good team. You know, St. Louis is a really, really good team, a team that you beat this week as well. And, you know, Furman, who,
right,
a mid-major school, beat Louisville earlier this year as well. So even those games are very difficult, and it works well in your team's favor that it kind of shapes up this way as well. And it also helps that you have Chattanooga coming up, who has also looked insanely impressive this year.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so this may not be exactly right, but Chattanooga will be our 12th game. And at least our 7th, maybe our 8th opponent that's in the top 125 right now. And, you know, somebody might hear that and say, well, top 125, that's no big deal. But there's 357 Division I teams, you know, so you're talking about, you know, on average, our schedule's like in the 80s, I think, you know. So we're playing a top 25, you know, percentile-wise in the top 25%, you know, difficult schedule of difficulty, if that makes any sense. So, and we haven't played anybody in the 300s, you know, so Even our games that haven't been top 125 have still been, you know, opponents that we have to play well to win, you know, games we could lose if we don't play well, that sort of thing. So, so overall, you know, it makes for a tough schedule for sure.
I mean, what I'm looking at right now, and of course, my main source in citing a lot of the resume stuff is warrennolan.com, a free plug for him because he has a fantastic website, sorts all this incredibly well, but has you guys a strength of schedule at 24. Huh. I mean, and that's, and of course, that kind of adjusts as the season goes along based on how the teams, you know, you're playing against do. But, I mean, you have a top 25 schedule in all of college basketball right now. You're still 8-3. And if we're talking, you know, resume too, which this is my favorite part of November and December basketball, is this how you're shaping up your resume for later in the season. But 8-3, I think, has went up in net. So you're about 37 in net ranking, 18 in RPI. 1-2 against quad one teams, 2-1 against quad two, 2-1 against quad three, and then a perfect 3-0 in quad four. If I would have reeled those numbers to you off when we spoke back in October, what would your initial reaction be?
Yeah, I would have taken it. I mean, I'm not ever, you know, nobody's ever satisfied with losing games, and I'm really angry that we've lost three. But at the same time, in reality, considering the games that we've played, would I have taken where we are right now? Then I would have answered absolutely yes. You know, depending on who we beat, who we lost to, that sort of thing. But, you know, I mean, Ohio is a top 75 team, and, you know, that was an opening season game, lost on the road. You know, LSU, we played miserably bad, but they're a top 25 team any way you cut it. You know, and then we lose by 2 to Dayton, who got off to a terrible start, but, you know, has since played much, much better. And, you know, that was a championship game of a really prestigious event that, you know, we played well enough to win, but we didn't. So I feel really good about it overall. Would I like to have more? Of course, but I would have taken it.
Yeah, Dayton's a weird team, too. Like, not many teams erase horrific starts to a season quite like Dayton did in the span of 4 days here during Feast Week. But I'll go to ask you about that tournament as well. I mean, that was a tournament coming into it. You said this is going to be an event where you're going to have ample opportunity to get wins on the resume that are going to look good. And you guys did that. A win against Drake was huge. Then, obviously, beating a Rick Pitino-coached Iona team, who is also, I want to say, top 45 in net as well. The metrics love Iona, and obviously Iona beat Alabama, who has turned around and beat Gonzaga as well. Pretty good teams there. And then, of course, you mentioned the loss to Dayton, and, of course, you did all of this in a span of 4 days. So what was it like having to play teams of this caliber, to coach against Rick Pitino, and then having to do all of this by scouting these teams only 24 hours in advance?
Yeah, it was a great event overall, as we knew it would be. You know, just the nature of a tournament, you don't really know who you're going to get, you know, outside of that first round game. You know, but the Drake game itself, I mean, that's where we started it, and I felt like it was a real high power game between two really good mid majors. They're picked to win the Missouri Valley, which is a heck of a league, and it took everything we had to win that one. And you know, and then we play Iona the next round right after they beat Alabama, and that game went the same way. It was just, you know, two really good teams and a tough game all the way through that we found a way to win. Then we get that Dayton game, and you know, Dayton's coming off a win against Kansas where they literally just go toe to toe and flat out beat Kansas. So it was good, and it was a challenge. We knew it would be, but you know, love how it turned out for us. The scouting part, you know, it's the same for everybody, so it's not a disadvantage in any way. But mm-hmm. But it does make it tough. And these days, you have so much at your fingertips that it doesn't take a whole. You got coaches that can do a lot well ahead, and you know, so once you find out who you're playing, you just get to work and cram it up, and then you figure it out from there.
Right, and another team that I'll ask you about that you played this season as well, and it's one that Michelle and I are going to hit on in our next episode, is LSU. I mean, LSU, a surprising team in my opinion. I didn't think they would be this good, and as of right now, they're number two in net ranking, which is an interesting metric, but they're number two in that, and then of all the teams in the top 10 in net, they have the highest average ranking win. So their average win this season is higher than anybody else in the top 10 of net. So a part of what we're trying to figure out is what makes this LSU team so good.
Yeah, they're really clicking on all cylinders right now. I think that's the biggest thing, is that on both ends of the floor, they're really, really dialed in and playing well. They've got unbelievable talent, as all of Will Wade's teams have had. I mean, just all across the lineup, they're big, they're strong, they're athletic. You know, pretty close to as much as anybody you're going to see in the country. You know, but it's that balance that's made them so good, in my opinion. I mean, they've got a lot of guys that can score the ball offensively. Defensively, they're a nightmare because they literally switch every screen. And, you know, so what that means to people out there that don't know better means that, you know, that it's really hard to run offense against them. You know, anything that you have set up, you know, as a play, for example, is not going to work the way that it was intended because they just switch all the screens. And so you got to improvise, and you got to have players that can break down the defense and that sort of thing, and they can guard the ball. So nothing is easy. And we just had a hard time, and we couldn't make shots, and then we panicked, and we got the result we got, which was, you know, terrible.
Right, yeah, and like I said, that's teams that switch everything are incredibly difficult. It reminds me of Leonard Hamilton teams for Florida State, which yep. He's essentially had the same blueprint to every team he's had since he's been there, but it's always tough because they're deep, they switch everything, and like you said, running the offense is a whole lot harder. It just adds like an extra wrinkle in there as well. So LSU is a team that definitely college basketball fans should be keeping an eye on. But we'll go ahead and talk about some of your players too. I mean, I'll start off with Nick Musinski, who is probably, I guess, one of the more, him and Grayson Murphy were the two probably the most popular players, you know, on your team. Every team that's coming into this game that plays you is going to say, oh, well, we need to stop the 6'11 guy with touch around the basket. And you see a lot of how defenses have played you guys this year, where they're going to front them a lot and then have help coming through the back. And when that happens, you know, you need to be able to have a center who can pass the ball pretty well. And Nick's averaging about, I think, 2.7 assists per game, which would tie for second on the team. Not a lot of teams get that out of their 6'11 big men. But what have you seen from Nick so far this season?
Yeah, a real weapon. There's no doubt about it because of the reasons that you mentioned. But, you know, he's been much better than ever before at the quality of shot that he's getting for himself. He's getting the ball much closer to the rim. He's getting more shots per game because of that. He's delivering at a much higher percentage. If you take his three-point percentage out of his overall percentage, his two-point percentage is phenomenal. You know, so he's playing like a guy a little bit more on a mission. I mean, he was arguably the best player in Orlando as far as the three games were concerned. 100% would have been the MVP had we won the game and had the numbers to warrant being the MVP as it was, but that rarely goes to a team that didn't win it. So it is. You know, I had a coach just this past week say exactly what you just mentioned, and that is everybody that starts their scouting report for Belmont starts with how are we going to guard Musinski? Are we going to play one-on-one? Are we going to front him? Are we going to let him catch it then go double him? You know, what are we going to do? Because we can't just, you know, we got to make sure our plan is good for him. And it's different for everybody based on their personnel.
Mm-hmm. And then another player, too, obviously, we'll go on the defensive side. And Grayson Murphy's a weapon on the offensive side. My favorite Grayson Murphy stat is that he's getting you about 3 steals a game and isn't committing more than 1 foul per game on average, which, I mean, a lot of guys that get a lot of steals are usually high-risk takers. It's high-risk, high-reward. They can get themselves in foul trouble, too. It's not necessarily an easy task by any means. But what has Grayson done defensively this year to help you guys out on that side of the ball, as well as what he brings you naturally on the offensive side?
Right, yeah. Or you know, there are things that don't show up on the stat sheet where, hey, yeah, it's high-risk, high-reward. He's getting steals, but he's taking himself out of position all the time, or he's losing his man, or he's not sound, or, you know, those kind of things. But he doesn't cause those problems. He's just, it's almost all positive results as far as he's concerned. So, you know, I think he's had maybe 5 games already this year where he has 5 or more steals in the game. I know in our game, gosh, maybe in the Lipscomb game, that was our game at Sanford, he had 5 in the first half.
Wow.
Phenomenal. And again, even unique there in a sense that most of his action comes off the ball. He's such a good anticipator. Be a great free safety. You know, he knows where the ball is going to go and he gets there and takes care of it. So, he gets us a lot of possessions back. You know, I mean, his value on defense, you know, is more for us than anybody's value is on offense. So I don't really care how many points he scores.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty phenomenal. I finally found the number I went to look at earlier, and that is that he is getting about 5 steals per 100 possessions and only fouling about 3 times per 100 possessions, which is pretty remarkable given the rate of steals. And he's also getting you 10 assists for 100 possessions as well, which is pretty mind-boggling. But another player that I've noticed this year that has helped you guys out a lot, Will Richard, had 15 points against St. Louis, has proven to be a pretty reliable scorer, and he's a 40-plus percent three-point shooter so far this year. So how impressed are you of his ability to contribute like this as a freshman on a roster that is loaded with upperclassmen?
Yeah, when you think about a team that was 26-4 last year and returned 97% of its minutes in scoring, you know, to be sitting here now 11 games into the season and say we've got a true freshman in the starting lineup, that's our third leading scorer, and making a big difference, you know, is speaks a lot about him and what he can do. He's just off to a great start. We there's no way we win the St. Louis game without him. As miserable as we were in the first half, you know, he was 3-for-4 from 3 in the first half. The rest of our team was 1-for-12. And so, you know, without his contribution and just kind of helping us stay in there, there's no way we win that game. But he's much more than that. He's a really good defender around the rim. He probably leads our team in block shots. As good as Musinski's set the school record for block shots, but I wouldn't be surprised if Will has more than he does already. They're probably close anyway. Mm-hmm. But he's a good player, and he's got a great future.
Oh, yeah. And I've asked you about the players that are on the roster right now, but I have to ask you this to close things out. An old player of yours, Garrison Matthews, has been basically inserted into the starting lineup for the Houston Rockets, and a team that lost 16 straight games here early in the season has now won 6 straight. And in those 6 games, Garrison Matthews has scored in double figures in every single one of those games, including 19 last night. and a big win over the James Harden and KD-led Brooklyn Nets. So one thing I'll ask, is this something that you first saw Garrison doing in, at the NBA level? And what are your thoughts on him finding a role in Houston and helping them win a couple games, even though they really weren't in a position to do a lot of that a month into the season?
Yeah, I love it, first of all. I mean, I'm so happy for him. Could not be more happy for him, you know, and the success that he's having. I mean, you take a guy that wasn't even on our roster when the season started, but just right there in those first couple of days, Houston signed him and sent him to their G League and, you know, parked him there for a couple of weeks until he could, they could figure out, you know, until he could figure out what they're doing and, you know, X's and O's wise and terminology and everything else. And then, you know, he was fine. He did well. But part of the reason he went with the Rockets was because he felt like they needed shooters and scorers. And if he did get called up, he would get an opportunity to play. He knew he was going to get called up because he's a two-way player, but he thought he would have a chance to produce. And now you're seeing that. I mean, would I have predicted he could do it at this level? I don't know if I would have predicted that, but also know scoring is scoring, and it doesn't really matter what level you are. I mean, if you're a guy that can put the ball in the basket, you can play the game. And he's combined that with the effort that he's making. He's playing extremely hard. It's awesome to see his confidence where it is. I mean, he looks like senior year at Lipscomb Garrison right now when I watch him play, as far as just, you know, playing without fear. And he had a nice, you know, he had a good 2 years in Washington, but he basically stood in the corner. To where they wanted him to be. Go stand in the corner so that we can spread the floor, and then if we pass it to you, make the shot. That was his role. But now he looks like Gary from Lipscomb, and it's really, really been fun to see.
He certainly does. Yeah, he's got a lot more room to be a full floor scorer there with the Rockets. So he's been a lot of fun to watch, and that's for people who are listening now, a fun player to kind of keep your eye on if the Rockets are on your TV here in the NBA season. Coach, thank you for joining us, and definitely looking forward to seeing the game on Wednesday at home against UTC. UTC, a team that's 7-1, and if it wasn't for an upsetting loss for them to College of Charleston, they would definitely be on many people's radars, one of the better mid-major teams in this country.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're I think they're actually 8-1 or 9-1 by now, because they won last night, maybe 8-1, but that two-point loss to Charleston, the only blemish. You got a really talented roster, predicted to win the SoCon, which is, I think, the 13th best league in the country out of 32 conferences or something like that. So another formidable foe. It would be a great win if we can get it. It'll be a great game regardless. I'm pretty sure of that.
Absolutely. Coach, best of luck Wednesday, and then best of luck moving on once you get a little closer to OVC play.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot for having me. Look forward to doing it again.